This week's podcast with Brandy Prather of Be Stitch Me is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America and Avlia Folk Embroidery. The biggest needle arts event of the year is the annual EGA National Seminar. This year's edition, Broadway Bound, will be held August 24 to 28 in New York City. Registration is now open through June 15. Learn more at egausa.org. In the education wing of EGA, there is a new class coming up called Freestyle Hoop Embroidery, taught by J. Marsha Mitchler. The class is described as learning to doodle with stitches. The project will have you create a geometric design within a 6-inch hoop using a variety of embroidery stitches, and then use 8 different outline stitches to finish off the design. Registration starts July 6. Learn more in the education section of the EGA website, and to participate in these and many more activities, join the EGA at egausa.org. Also sponsoring this week's show is Avlia Folk Embroidery at avliaembroidery.com. Designer Krista West continues to introduce a steady stream of striking designs. The new standout for us is the Byzantine band sampler Krista introduced during our 500th show. It will be available in August and is a must-stitch design. Also new is the Rigged Diamonds Table Runner. This eye-catching design, based on a traditional Latvian textile motif, is available now in kit or chart format. You'll also want to check out the Santorini Stars and Athenian Sunflowers designs. See these and many more at avliaembroidery.com. Thanks to the EGA and Avlia Folk Embroidery for sponsoring this week's show. And now on to our conversation with Brandy Prather. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Be Stitch Me, Brandy Prather. Brandy, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here today.
Oh, this is going to be fun. So we've got two things to talk about. We've got dyeing thread and dyeing fabrics, and then we have a new shop. You're opening a new shop, so we get to talk about that.
So, oh, so much fun.
Yeah, so 3 hours from now, we'll be finished, so it'll be great.
Yeah.
That's right. Lots to discuss.
All right, now when we have somebody opening a shop who has an established business dyeing thread and fabric, my first question is, which came first, stitching or dyeing?
Oh, definitely stitching. I've been stitching since I was 13. I don't know how long it's been then, like over 25 years. So I've been stitching for a long time. And I recently, I would say in the last 5 to 6 years, got into dyeing fabric for myself. And then the whirlwind of Be Stitch Me came.
What made you jump into dyeing fabric?
Getting on social media and realizing there was more than white.
right.
So I don't know what happened. Like one day I just remember scrolling through some new, I guess it's when I discovered social media, because for the longest time I just assumed the only thing that existed was Michael's and Joanne's cross stitch kits until I started branching out and finding like little shops. I was like a sheltered cross stitcher. So that's when I discovered hand dye fabrics, and I was like, oh, I can just do this myself. So, and that's what I started doing, and it just turned into so much more.
Now there's a theme for a show. What's it like to be a sheltered cross stitcher?
Yeah. Well, I'm one who starts a lot of projects and rarely has finishes. I just get so excited. Like, this is all new. It's not just dimensions kits. Nothing against it, though, because some of them are fantastic, but there's so much more to it.
Beth, you realize we're on the verge of putting together a special EGA guild of people who start a ton of stuff and never finish.
That's right.
Yeah. I would be right up there.
Yeah, we.
I have like 100 whips.
Yeah. See, we got something going here. Yeah.
Yeah.
But 100 whips. That's not a big deal. I mean,
I know. Maybe I should do 200.
Right. One for every day of the week. Not every day. Every day of the year.
Yep.
Hey, I'm getting there, and I'll probably be there.
There's so many fun projects out there. I can understand. You know, it's like, really, I'll just I'll just start this one. You know, it won't take me any time. And then the next shiny after that.
Yep.
That's true. Yeah.
So you discover that it doesn't have to be white. And you say, all right, I can dye my own stuff. So we start in the kitchen with the pots and pans and dye packets.
I didn't do the kitchen because I was really, I like read all the hazard warnings, and we have six kids. So it's like, okay, I don't want to poison anybody. I don't really know what I'm doing here. So I actually started in my garage. But I would wash it out in the tub the first couple of times I did it for myself. And my husband was like, it is staining the bathtub. And I was like, I know, I'm sorry. But, it finally came out after months of scrubbing. So that's, yeah. And then I just got a utility sink in our basement because it did not matter if I got it messy. So
right.
It's kind of where I started. It was the garage. And even, you know, every time we run around on our, I don't know, like our anniversary time of the year when we started, my daughter, my oldest daughter, she's like, do you remember when we started in the garage? It's like, yeah, this is crazy.
So what is the garage? Is it like a witch's cauldron with a hose running from the house? And
no, it really wasn't. It was me carrying out if I needed water, like in a big bucket or like a 5 pound or a gallon bucket. it was a mess, but it was very small. Like I just dyed stuff for myself, and then the leftover I had, I was like, well, hey, let's throw it up on Etsy. Let's see if, you know, we could sell a couple of pieces just for fun. And we did. So.
And that's what took off, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it really did. And I think it was exciting. And I think just our, like my whole family, even my kids, we're all very artistic and into the arts. And it was just meant to be.
Yeah. Now, is it, do you start with the RIT dye? Is that the standard starting spot?
I have never used RIT dye. I went straight for the fiber reactive dyes. So,
oh,
I never tried the RIT dyes, but that's a good start. I mean, a lot of people who hand dye their own start with that, and they're, from what I hear, amazing and do well, but I didn't go that path. I just dove right in after weeks of research and trying to figure out what's the best method. It was a lot of learning.
Yeah. Well, Beth just dyed a beautiful yellow linen for me that I'm anxious to get started on. So, yeah.
Right. And the Procyon dyes, Procyon, Prochem, I think they're the same.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They come out with so many beautiful colors, but I know I went to a quilt show and that's how I started. You bought three colors and then you mix those three colors in varying amounts, and then you got like 30 colors when you were done. And it was just like, oh, what else can I dunk in the dye bath?
I know.
my kids were a little worried about their t-shirts at the time. I was like, oh, I think that needs to be dyed. Can I have that?
Same here. Like when my kids, we just go get packets of white t-shirts. I'm like, oh, what gift could I make for you today? Or do you want your sheets dyed?
That's right. You know?
So you do a bunch of research, but then I got to believe that once you start dying and trying to be serious about it, that the learning curve absolutely starts all over. The research just simply tells you the basics, but there's no way.
Oh, absolutely.
Experience is the only thing that gets you to be able to control
it. It really is. And I wish I had a mentor because it's been so much trial and error. You're like, well, I won't do that again, but it's been fun. And I think I've just learned so much over the last several years that I'm really excited for what the future will bring, because if I look back, you know, 4 years from today, I'm like, ooh, what the heck was I thinking? But yeah, you just learn so much. I learn something new every day. So it's fun.
So you start
a lot of experimenting.
Oh, I'm sure of that. Yeah. So you start with cloth. At what point, I mean, you put it on Etsy, and does it take off quickly for you? And pretty soon you're buying bolts and bolts of.
Oh, no. It actually was a really slow process. I would say it probably took like a year and a half before I moved off of Etsy. It took a lot of me trying to promote. It was a slow process. Like, it wasn't like this huge, quick thing. I will say that COVID was thankfully a huge accelerator for me because a lot more people, I think, were stuck at home and finding more hobbies, which was wonderful. So I think that was a big jump for me. But Etsy was really slow. I mean, there's so many wonderful fabric dyers out there. I would say the competition is real.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's something I wonder about, because we really do have a lot of dyers, and you get, you know, there's just a lot of creative fabric out there, colors and modeling and you know, and then you have people like Beth who just do it on her own, just because she enjoys doing it. That there becomes some real competition where at some point in the recent past, I don't think that was so much the case.
Yeah, I remember when I got started, I didn't know, or when I did my research for how many other people dyed, I didn't know there was that many. But in comparison to what there is today, there is so much. So I would assume that it had grown over the last couple of years with the amount of people who've been jumping into hand dyeing. So, yeah, I mean, wonderful competition.
But I also think that there's room for a lot of people, because...
So do I. Yeah.
I think people like different things. You know, you can find, and that way, you know, dyeing linen is kind of scary nowadays if you're just dyeing it yourself, because, you know, it is an experiment if you're not doing a lot of it, and it's expensive. So sometimes it's like, okay, do I want to pay this amount for a piece of linen and dye it myself and it not come out? Or do I just want to wait and order it from somebody where I know that I'm getting the color I want?
Right.
And there's something to be said for that, you know?
And the variety, I feel like it's kind of like an artistic touch for every one of the dyers out there. We all have our own style and different colors. So I think, I mean, it's wonderful that we have so much, especially, you know, to choose from. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one can never have too much fabric.
No, you can't. So when people say, I have this too much, I'm like, you may need to be stitching faster. There is no such thing.
There's no such thing as too much fabric.
Right.
What is the demand these days? Is it higher count linens, Aida, a mixture?
I would say, this is a hard question. I would say it's pretty balanced for me. Like if I just look at like overall, like my fabric club, I think it's pretty balanced. It really depends what color though. More colorful stuff I'll find on Aidas and Even Weaves, and a lot of neutrals for the higher count like linens.
Okay.
That seems to go along with like people who do samplers want the more neutral colors.
Yep.
And then the, I don't know, like I think of those gaming, those pixelated things, and I don't know what they're called, but you can get those patterns that they look like they'd be fun on some of those brighter fabrics.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do a sampler on lemon yellow.
That'll be pretty.
It's sitting right here. That's why I keep mentioning it, because it's really cool. And all the stuff on my table, it stands out.
Yeah, and it's fun to try different things. I you know, looking through your linens, there's colors. There was one that's like an autumn blend, and like a Halloween. I think you call it Halloween.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? That would be kind of fun. I know it's very bright, but it'd be fun to do a sampler on, just to be different, just to be something totally different.
I know some of the colors, I think, oh gosh, some of them are a little bit bold and extreme. I'm like, what would I ever stitch on this? But I end up finding things. So I'm like, well, it'll work.
Right.
So. Now, does that, the colors, is that something where you just going through the days, you see a color and say, hey, I want to match that?
I think I get a lot of my inspiration. So like I look at palettes and combinations. I think I pull a lot from nature. So like if I'm trying to think of something like, I love this flower, like how can I get this flower to be a fabric for me? Or like a lot of stuff in nature, I would say, like from my garden, or I love the Southwest. So those sort of things I pull into, like, what could I do to turn this into a fabric color that would remind me of this place or this thing? So I think that's where I get a lot of my inspiration from. And sometimes it's just like, I really like these colors. Let's just see what happens.
Right. Just playing.
Yeah.
As you've done more, do you feel like when you see a color, do you feel like you have enough experience that you know how to approach at least getting close to that and then adjust?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're at that point then.
Yeah, a lot of people will send a request like, I want this fabric. And I say, just shoot me the DMC number that the color might be close by. So because if they just send me a picture, I might see something different than they do on a screen. And it's their monitor will look different than mine or my phone. So it's like, if you just send me a range with a DMC color, I could almost match it. And that's the easiest thing for me.
That's really cool that you can do that. Wow.
Yeah. It's been a lot of dying.
I'll bet.
A lot of samples.
Yeah.
There's been some tears in there too somewhere, but it's all been fun.
So now are you at a point where you have shelves with bolts of white fabric? And
I do.
Yeah. Okay.
I do. Yeah. I do, and it's really crazy to think about. I bought my dye studio where I'm at now back last fall because I was driving, I would say, my family crazy with the fabric taking over the house. So right. I did move it out of the house, and I do have the big rolls of fabric now, which are amazing. So
yeah, that's got to be a comfort knowing that you have a supply when
yes.
Yeah. So all right, so you literally have a studio. What's that like to set up a studio for dyeing? Is it, you have to take kind of a manufacturing approach to how you lay it out?
Oh, I don't know if I didn't really put too much thought into it, except for what's convenient for, I guess, for me dyeing. I was lucky enough to get a really big building last year that just needed a lot of work. And I don't know anything about manufacturing. I just know how we just have a pretty smooth setup for dye mixing, dyeing section. My husband is the analogy I use is like, since I have a medical background, I'm like the surgeon. I come in, I make a mess and master dye everything. And then he's like my assistant who, like the surgical tech, and comes in and cleans up everything, the mess I make. I love it, obviously, because I don't got to clean up my disasters. But I just come in. So like we kind of work together because he has to do the cleanup. And so I come in and I make all the dyes, and he kind of preps everything and sets it up for me. And I make my giant mess and say, all right, okay, I'm done. Wash it out.
It's nice that you have a husband that's willing to be on the team.
Yeah. It's been about 2 years, I would say, he jumped on board helping me. So it's truly a family business, because also my kids also jump in and help too. So it's amazing.
Oh, that's great. But no, by manufacturing, I meant, you know, obviously just in your description there, you laid out a production line.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. It's great to have that family support, though. So, and he's okay with the cleanup. He's not going to turn around on you one day and say, you know, let's switch roles here.
No, everyone who helps me go is not. No, he would never want to die. He would mess it up. It'd be a waste of fabric. No, if he wants to switch roles, he can go find his own thing, I guess.
What are the safety factors that are involved? Because, I mean, you don't want to breathe that dust, so there has to be some things put in place, I got to believe, just to make sure you don't get some lung disease.
Absolutely, and I did make that mistake last year. So mask, especially when mixing dyes, is a must, because you don't think that powder is going to, you're going to breathe it in, but there's one day I showed like them, I had a white N95 mask, and I used a peach color, so the really fine dye powder, and when I was done mixing it, you could just see my whole mask was covered on the outside with that dye powder, and on the inside it was not. So if you're not wearing a mask and you think you're safe, like, oh, just a couple times, you're not. I got really sick last year because I made the mistake during an ice dye. I was in a hurry. I was probably overworked and tired. I did not throw a mask on when I did an ice dye, and I ended up getting like a bronchial asthma because of all the dye powder I breathed in, and it took me months to get better. Hmm. So safety is really important if you're dying, like I learned the hard way.
Yeah. Right. And we always tell people, because we do dye at our local library, and we'll ice dye, and we'll pull out masks for people. You want to wear, because all you need to do is sneeze.
Yeah, you don't realize, like, walking around the shop, like, we only have a certain blocked off section for dyeing. Like, those little particles will float through the air. So that's why we keep everything lid, everything cleaned. Around the dye making area, you can see small particles. So I think it's very important for masks. I mean, that's the biggest safety thing. Like, if you get it on your skin, it washes off, but we do wear gloves, but gloves break. So,
you
get busy. Is the biggest thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You get busy. And then all of a sudden you look down and you're like, oh, look, I have pink and purple, and there's a little green on my hand.
When the shop opens, you'll know what colors I dye by my forearms, because it's like, oh, well, yeah, I got certain colors this week.
Yes, yes. And it does come off. That stuff, the dye itself, once it's in the dye powder, even, it's not toxic. That's not
it's
the toxic.
Not.
It's the
it's
particles.
Not.
It's the particles that are bad.
Yeah, it's the particles you breathe in. So the biggest key is to make sure you always wear a mask when mixing, and until it's out in liquid form.
So the dyeing area where you do the mixing, that's all closed off. I assume exhaust fan and.
Yep, that's a separate section of the building. So my building is broken up from like fabric storage, and then where we serge and prep silk, and then where the storefront's going to be. And everything's kind of grouped off and sectioned off into separate rooms.
Okay. All right. That's just interesting to me that how you go about that. Then, so when does thread enter the picture? At some point, you just decide, hey, I want to try some thread too?
Gosh, when did I start doing that? I want to say late 2020 maybe, or early 2021, but I don't remember, but it was around there. I don't know why I decided. I think I just had a couple people ask if I would do some over dye threads, and I was really wanting to do silks because for one, they're super expensive, and I'm kind of a cheapo sometimes. but I really wanted to get into dyeing that. That was so much harder to learn than fabric. It is still a learning process for me. but they have been very fun to learn, and I do have a whole new silk color line coming out when the shop opens, and that I've been working on for the last year, so I'm very excited for that.
Silk harder to dye than cotton? There's got to be a difference.
I would not say it's that it's hard. I've never dyed cotton thread.
Okay.
So I don't know. But just from the fabric aspect, I would say the colors are very different than what I would expect. So like if sometimes like I think I'm dyeing a deep blue, I might get purple on silk. So the colors are very different. And there's several different processes you could use as well. So.
Now you have variegated threads and solid colored threads. And how does that variegation get done? Is that a hand thing or?
Yes.
Okay.
It's hand. So yep. It's whatever method I use for it, then I just lie it out and put the colors where they need to go for the variegation and let it do its thing.
So then you control how rapidly or slowly the variegation occurs within a length of thread then?
Yeah. Well, I could control the colors. And then I have it's really good scientific once you really start talking about like the color making process and the time, and we look at humidity factors and heat and all that good stuff. So I have a very set process, so everything is done the same, like in controlled. So each time I do it, that if everything's correct, that color will pretty much be the same every time.
It's got to be fun to watch. I need to make a trip.
It is.
Well, the chemist, you know, the chemistry of it is fascinating to me. And then the interaction with the thread or the ground cloth, and then there's some art involved too. So it's just fun. You know, it's not like you can stand there and I'm just speculating, but I'm assuming you got to be on top of your game all the time. You can't just go into automatic mode with these things.
No, not really. And, you know, and I think that has been some experimenting for me. Like, I think I could do, like, oh, I'll just, I've done this 1,000 times, I'll go do it. And then if I'm off my game or, you know, not having a great day, my fabric will reflect that. And I'm like, okay, well, this is going to be a scrapped batch. So I really like, if I have a pretty strict schedule for my dyes, and if, you know, if I'm not feeling it that day, then I'm probably not going to dye that day. Cause I think it's a mental thing for me artistically. Like, I have to be in the mood for it. I never go into a dye session where I'm like, I don't want to do this, because I think it reflects on the work that I do. So.
I agree.
Yeah.
Now, is it, you got to control how much time, it's got to get at some point quite exhausting or tiring to do that work. You got to watch yourself, or you start getting sloppy just because you're tired.
Oh yeah. Like if I'm tired and I've been working all day, I won't do a dye batch at the end of the day. I don't want to do that. I usually dye early. I like to dye early in the day. When I'm excited and not like run down for working all day, but, sometimes if the mood strikes me in the evening, I'm like, I got this great idea. I'm doing it. So, right. But I also, this is my passion. Like, it is very hard for me not to be like, I don't want to die today. Like, I live and breathe this, and I have, and I love it. So, I don't foresee a time or me being like, oh, I don't want to do this today.
Now, with thread and linen and Aida cloth, you have an excellent foundation for a shop, but still to decide to open a shop, that's quite a decision. What leads you to make that leap?
Well, it was part of my original plan. It wasn't supposed to be in action so soon, but long-term, it was my plan to have a cross-stitch shop. But when I got this building, it's right on the avenue in Moline, and I keep getting so much foot traffic in, like, hey, are you opening a CrossFit shop? Oh. And I was like, I guess I am. Yeah. So it would just be really stupid for me, honestly, not to, because this building I have has so much space. There's 4,000 square feet.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was, and it's so close to my home, like, literally, I could bike here every morning. And we have a huge portion for the dye studio and storage, and then almost like still over 1,000 square feet left for the shop that we were just kind of hanging out in, folding fabrics, you know, just overusing the space we had because we didn't know what to do with it. So we're going to turn it into a cross stitch shop this summer.
And there's nothing, the closest cross stitch shop, I think, is at least an hour and a half away.
Yeah, that's what I looked when I looked online. So there's really nothing that close. So it'd be it's honestly needed and perfect, because the only time I've ever been was when I'd run to Chicago to their shop or order online. But it's so different to see it in person.
Right, right. Especially if you're changing your background fabric, or you want to look at the fabric and see them. It's nice to see them in person. And also when you have models on the walls. You look at, you know, you see a picture and you're like, okay, yeah, that's all right. But then you see it stitched in person. You're like, oh yeah. Yeah. I want to do that one.
That makes a huge difference.
So this space you have where the shop is going, pretty much a blank slate. You're not, sounds to me like you just have a shell and you now get to create your shop.
Yeah. It was before, I want to say, like a screen printing shop. And then out of the front, they sold their shirts and sweatshirts for like the sportswear in our city. So we just kind of regutted the whole front and changed it to fit our needs. And then we saved the back workshop area for the dyeing. So it could be separate, but there's no intermingling, and it's perfect.
You're going to be the only shop owner who comes out in apron and arms covered in dye.
I put a lot of thought into this, like, what would my store hours be so that I could dye separate from when the shop is open? But right. I will still have dye on my arms, because I mean, that lasts for a couple days.
Right.
So that's so we're gonna primarily cross stitch, but gonna be the full thing. So fabrics, charts, threads, the whole shoot and match.
Yeah, lots of fabric. Obviously, that's gonna always still be my main thing is fabric and silk. So there will be lots of that.
So what goes through your head when you're selecting threads from other people and you have your own line? Is it, there's got to be some interesting exchanges in your mind about, mine's better than this or.
Oh, absolutely not. I never say mine is better. I really admire other people's work too. So I would never say that mine's better. It just would be comparing like burger places too. Like, everyone's different. Sometimes I don't always want to go eat at Five Guys or there might be something else I want to go try. So I think variety is really good. And I know I'm not the only one and I shouldn't be. So I still use like other people's silk because it was called for with a pattern. And I think that's important. And then sometimes I dye my own almost the same. So I guess it just depends.
Okay.
I really try to match and dye my own because I like to use it, especially because anything I stitch, I'm going to put in models in my shop. So I try my best to use my own, but I still like using other stuff too.
You have some charts on your website.
Yes.
You've some stuff I've not seen. What was that? Those like fairies and.
Oh, the Bella Filipino.
Yes. Wow. Where'd you find them?
I don't exactly remember if somehow I got directed toward their Facebook group and then I touched base with the designer and was able to get his charts. But now he's all over the place. Like his stuff is even on 123 Stitch. So he's out of the Philippines and I love his charts. I have so many of them kitted up ready to go.
Well, when I was researching for you and found those, I wrote to him right away to see if he'd do a show because that's interesting stuff.
Oh my gosh, his stuff is so, and he comes out with a new chart, I want to say every month.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Very prolific.
Yeah.
Yep.
I can't keep up with those ones. They're going to take me years anyway, so they're just stockpiling in my ready to go.
Yeah, that's all right though. Someday you'll have this urge and you're like, oh, I need to start that one, right?
Yeah.
Not a problem. Yeah. I don't see any problem with that.
So what have been some of the challenges getting this shop going? Is it inventory decisions, layout, or just simply time to get it together?
It's time. It's really been time. I'm still trying to run everything that I have been with. I took on a lot of boxes this year, which was maybe a little too much for me, but I think just time and working with contractors, like doing that sort of thing I've never done before. So it's been a real challenge because I'm always at the mercy of what their schedule is and the wait for things. So I think that's been the biggest challenge, getting things up and running for the shop or the cross stitch store. So
yeah,
I don't think inventory has been a huge problem. I know I'm not going to have probably 40 count when the store opens, but everything else is probably good.
Well, you control the two biggest things, the thread and the ground cloth. So that puts you at a real nice advantage just having that.
Oh, goodness. I know. And I'm ready. I have a huge stockpile for when the store opens.
Yeah. Oh, well, and that's so cool that you have a line of threads that you can introduce when the store opens. Yeah, that's great.
I know. I'm very excited.
And Beth wants to know when's opening day and what time so she can be there.
So it's been back and forth. I've been waiting for a contractor. I was hoping to open July 1st, but I think we're going to, for reasons for deliveries and setup, we're going to have our grand opening August 2nd and have like, I don't know what you call it, like a soft opening or open a couple days starting on the July 29th. But our big grand opening celebration will be August 2nd.
There you go.
Like I said, my local guild is very, when it was mentioned at a meeting, there was immediate a gasp, the chatter of excitement went through the room. And then like, when is she opening?
Right.
And And, you know, when we are, because we want to support you. We,
yeah,
we
that's miss amazing.
We miss having a local shop. And yeah, you can order things online, and I do, but to be able to physically go into shop, look at threads, look at charts, look at fabric, there's something to be said for that. And
yeah,
and it's fun. And it's, and we've discussed, you know, depending on what you have available, whether you'd have room for us to meet as a group and stitch.
Oh, there. I will. I do have a spot set aside because the layout of the shop, I have a big open room that I'll keep for fabric and stitching, and then a side room that I've already had put together for like a, I still have to order the table, but, or tables, however we do it, but for a stitching area.
Well, that'll be perfect.
Yeah.
So well, we'll excited. Be joining you. We'll be joining you. Yeah. Because it's fun to meet at a shop rather than just meeting it at a coffee
shop. Or, yeah.
Right. Or the library or wherever it's because then if, oh, you kind of see the other things that are there to stitch. It's just,
yeah,
it's just a different atmosphere and it's fun. So looking forward to that.
Now,
if you have that kind of space, then that suggests classes are on the horizon too.
I have thought about the classes. If time would allow, what I've thought honestly first is like for the younger kids, like teenagers or even younger, I would like to do classes with them. And then I even have them come in and dye their own fabric, like have it be a couple, like a group of classes, like, you know, a 3 or 4 thing. So they could dye their own fabric, cross stitch on that fabric and get their own kit. So I put some thought into that. I'm not 100% sure yet, but something fun, especially for the kids and teenagers who want to try something new or get into cross stitch.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so much potential. Is this in downtown Moline or where is it located?
No, it's not in downtown Moline. It's on Avenue of the Cities, which I don't know. I'm not from Moline, so I would say it's a pretty common street. A lot of traffic goes down. It's been an older. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Are you closer to like the I-74?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So it's right off the interstate, off of Avenue of the Cities in Moline.
Right.
So it's on the main stretch.
It's not a hard place to find. I know about where you are. And if, yeah, for people who are close enough, but not maybe local to the area, that it'd be an easy place to get to because you're right off of
W4. It's a couple blocks away from the high school. So it'd be like between the Moline High School and I-74.
Okay. Beth has Google Maps out right now. She's...
Well, if you're going to go there, it's between a Grinders and a Shell station.
Now I know exactly where you are. That is like really scary. And I like your idea of teaching the kids and teaching them because I know like the local homeschool group, we're talking about teaching them and they want a 4-week session.
That would be so fun.
Teach them and I can see them really enjoying something like that where the older teens, you know, dye their own fabric and then do something with it. Cause then there's a sense of pride, you know, I dyed my own fabric on this, you know, it's just not the normal, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. So, our kids ranges, from like, my oldest is almost 18 and then we have a 5-year-old and she has been dyeing fabric since she was 3. So I'll get the colors all prepped up for her and she'll come in and she'll dye some fabrics that I have set out and she loves it. So that's what gave me the idea for the kids because I mean, if I could get anyone into cross stitch, that's my goal. None of my kids ended up liking cross stitch. So it makes me sad.
Well, and yeah, I understand because my daughter stitches, but she doesn't do cross stitch. She does kind of more free form.
Okay. And,
but yeah, you know, none of mine either. Yeah, she just wants to dig through my stash and take my thread. So
yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, if I'm an art or chemistry teacher at that high school, I'm getting together with art teacher and chemistry teacher, and we're putting together a unit to learn a little chemistry in the real world and create some colors. And yeah, you could work through.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, you could have a whole thing with the school. Yep.
Yeah. Right. The other question I have for you is, have you thought about maybe even holding a day retreat since you've got such a big space?
I haven't, but that's a good idea.
Yeah, because we have done a little dying with people at the library, like I said, and but again, we don't normally dye linen there. We dye the cottons for quilting, because that's what most of the people do. But I could see something like that where people, you got the opportunity to maybe dye a piece of linen for your own project, and then you buy the kit, you have the kit. I don't know. Just a thought.
Yeah, I like
or
that
even
idea.
Just or even just getting together and stitching for a long day, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that would work as well, because they will have the space for that. So.
Right.
Yeah, be careful, Brandy. Beth is a professional enabler, so I'm just warning you.
And I take it all in. I'm like, let's go for it. I'm just like, we're doing it.
And my mind is going. I'm like, okay, I need to get together with Brandy, because, you know, that's one of the problems. There's several places people go to hold workshops. If you're going to have a teacher come in, we all often don't have a spot to do that. We're competing with the very big quilt guild in the area. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they've booked everything up because they have a lot of classes, and we're scrambling to find a place to have a teacher that we could have consistently over several days. And I'm thinking, maybe Randy. Maybe we could talk about that, because that would be great, because I think it'd be a win for our guild and for your shop. You know, you get
absolutely.
Oh, that would be fun.
Be careful, Brandy. Right. I'm warning you.
I'm taking notes. Just tell me little ideas.
Oh, Brandy.
I'm glad my husband can't hear this right now, because he's like, don't do anything else. Just stop jumping into everything. He's like, give us a break.
So our materials, the shops and, well, anybody who's involved in this hobby have really had a hard time getting threads and linen and really anything. Is that getting better for you?
No.
No? Okay.
It goes in its waves. I know the latest, I had a couple of people reach out to me, and they're concerned for the 40 count linen. And I'm like, so am I. We're just going to impatiently wait. And it goes in its waves. Like, there was a time last year, or the year before, when we couldn't get even weaves, and I was like in panic mode, like, oh my gosh. But it just goes in its cycles with what they're producing. So we just have to impatiently wait and not freak out.
Now, what's that like when, say, 40 count, you can't get 40 count now, you want it, you need it. When it becomes available, how do you prevent yourself from overbuying? I mean, obviously, if it becomes available, you want to get as much as you can, because you don't know when the next, what lies ahead. Is that a complete guess?
It is. And honestly, I hate buying like that, because I don't really want to get stuck with that much fabric. Well, I mean, I know I'd use it up eventually, but I honestly wouldn't have the money to just overbuy like that anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have to just still make a smart business decisions. Like, even though, like, it ran out, I mean, next time it might be 32 count linen we're low on. So it's just really unpredictable. And I just kind of buy based on what I'm selling and what my clubs are doing, and a little bit extra.
Okay. Because, see, it's an interesting thing for small businesses these days. I do a lot of cycling, and the same problem exists in the bicycle world that exists in the needlework world. Parts and pieces and bikes are just not available. And I was reading an article the other day about shops that had ordered 2+ years ago, and now the bikes are coming in and they don't want them.
Oh my goodness.
You know, because the customers have moved on and found other bikes. And so they're dealing with this difficult situation of, I ordered these bikes, I don't want them, and then the manufacturers are saying, you have to take them. And so, you know, it just gives some insight into the small business world. And like you said, you don't have the money to tie it up in inventory for a long time. And so it's just really tough to do when it comes to small businesses, and you only have so much storage space and so much capital, and you got to move it. You got to keep it moving. So it's you know, it just makes me curious how you work your way through that. And
I've not run out of 40 count linen yet, but I know I will, because I do not expect to get any in by August. But everyone's in the same boat. Like, we're all in the same sad boat with no 40 count. Well, from what I understand, the majority of us are, then, at least. So it'll, when it comes in, it'll be fine. I mean, I remember when everyone was out of, I think it was 28 count even weave. I never ran out of it, but it's kind of unpredictable. And it's really just how things are currently with a lot of businesses. I mean, it might just not be cross stitch. I mean, we're waiting for threads and all that stuff that's been on back order forever as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's just everyone being a little more patient. Or just supporting still the small businesses, because, I mean, some things are just out of our control. Like, I ordered stuff months and months ago, and I've just been impatiently waiting.
Right. And I think that's the bottom line. I mean, yeah, maybe you can't find exactly the fabric count you want, you know, as a stitcher, but maybe you're going to have you're going to have to adjust.
Have some backup options.
Right. That's why we have stash, right?
Yeah. I mean, it really exploring just more than one count anyway is amazing. But I mean, I would say majority of people anyway, if they don't want 40 count, they know what other account they want. And I have it. So I haven't run into any like huge things that I feel like is a complete setback. Because we're going to all experience that kind of shift in demand. And we can't control what Zygworks producing, so
right
just being patient.
The Zweigert, the people who produce the base materials, geez, I'm sure they're just running around the clock trying to keep up.
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, right. You know, and that's the kind of thing too where you talk about when you're tired and you die and you have a batch you have that basically is useless to you. You know, when you start running around the clock like that for weeks on end, you really have to watch that quality control, because it can just start to deteriorate to the point where people now start looking at your material as no thanks, I don't want it.
Yeah. And, absolutely. And I think I've identified that like within my business. I mean, there's been times when I dyed a batch and I was like, you know what? I wasn't feeling that and I shouldn't have done that. But I think that's also just being mindful and still keeping a work-life balance. That's really important to me. And I will say that I'm the worst person for it, because like when you love something so much, you just want to go and go and go. Like I have with Be Stitch Me, but I have really like, hey, this is my cutoff now. You know, I go home in the evenings. I spend time with my family. And that's really important to me as well. And it gives me time to recharge for the next day. And I find myself being more productive and energetic for what I love.
Yeah, it's that balance is important. People think about it as oh, I just want time off of work. But I did an editorial for the magazine I edit not too long ago. I'd listened to a podcast with some guys in the military, and sleep was the topic. And the experimenting that they have done with Coast Guard helicopter rescue crews and the of course, like the pilot, when the pilot sits in that seat, it isn't just his life. It's everyone else who's in that craft, plus the person they're trying to save. And the whole experiment that they did, and people thinking they were getting enough sleep and discovering that they weren't, weren't even close. And then how the missions that they ran were handled so much better if people had proper rest. And and it gets back to that work-life balance. And if you're grinding away at work all the time, it just, you don't even notice it. It just deteriorates. And eventually it's, you hit rock bottom. And
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, when I started out working, I was still working full time as a nurse, and I was doing Bestitch Me when I would come home from work and after getting the kids to bed. And then I would do that till like 2 or 3 in the morning and just cycle through that and do it all over again, like go to work, come home. And it would, I mean, I didn't burn myself out, but gosh, I was tired and I don't know how I did it. I did not enjoy that part because I do like my sleep now that I have a more balanced life.
Yeah.
Even if it means there's a wait time for fabrics, I will keep that because my time with my kids is more important than, you know, getting your fabric a little bit quicker than not Amazon.
Right. And that's good to note. I think sometimes people think everything is Amazon, and we're, and that's sad. We're got to remember there's people on the other end that you're ordering from, and they have other lives, and we need to be patient.
And I am grateful for all the support. Really, I am. And I know there's some impatience out there, but I'm only one person to dye, and that's the way Bestitch Me will always be. I will only ever be the dyer. I will not bring anyone else to dye. Unless Octavia, when she grows up, she's like, hey, can I? I was like, absolutely, kid. I'll probably be 60 by then. You can jump right in.
So my back and feet will be killing me. Yeah, you can do
it. Oh, they already do.
So what happens with all of this that's going on? Do you have time for personal stitching, or is that just gone by the wayside?
I haven't the last 2 months, I will say that. Last year I did a model stitch for somebody, so I didn't have any personal stitching. I was just so sad. But I do get time, like in the evenings. I try to at least get an hour in a day.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's really important for me to still stitch because it makes me feel better.
Well, good for you that you take that personal time to do that.
I need it. I mean, it's why I'm doing this. If I had to do all this and never get a stitch, I would start to get a little bit angry.
Yes.
Yeah. So what are your, what do you stitch when you do? Is it larger pieces, smaller pieces? A mixture?
Oh, definitely
large. Of course, we already know you have 500 whips, so.
Yeah, I have been tempted just to do like one of those little wee ones just to say I have a finish because that would take me like a weekend. But no, I love like the big heaven and earth designs. Most of my stuff is larger pieces. So yeah, if I can find a small one, I am going to have a finish for my son this month because I'm trying to grind it and get it done and make it into a pillow for him. But it'll be my first finish in like this year.
I love that. Go small. I had 10 finishes this month. They're each 30 stitches, but I got them done.
You know, it counts. And sometimes I'm like, I'm not going to start a new project till I finish something. And then I'll go do like a little tiny, super tiny one. Be like, well, new start. Here I come.
a woman after my own heart. I totally understand. See, you know, you get something done and then you're like, okay, I can start two projects then, right?
Yeah.
Like, because it's big, you know.
Yep. And which is silly because I'm like, I'm the one making all the rules. Just start it.
Just do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, Brandy, this has been fantastic. Congratulations so far and looking forward to that shop. So for people who are looking, bestitchme.com. And she has an Instagram account and a Facebook account, too, so you can find her anywhere. And fair warning, when you go to bestitchme.com and start looking at threads and linen, be careful. you'll want one of each. So, and then in August, we're going to have the new shop open up in Moline. And, oh, great fun all the way around. Brandy, thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you.
Yep. Looking forward to it and good luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Yep. You bet.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening.